Agree on the Hilbert space. They agree. Generally, the scenario I have in mind is that they all start with some initial information which everyone agrees on, and then each of them goes out and acquires some additional information. I will talk a little bit about the difficulties that this can get you into later in the talk, but for the moment, I'm not going to worry about that. Yeah.
You say that they have acquired information about the system. Was this by making a measurement or through some other process, like asking Charlie how he prepared it?
I'm waving my hands. I assume that all the information derives originally from measurements of some kind. They may have done measurements, someone else may have done measurements, and then passed the information on to them. The information derives originally from measurement by somebody, of something.
But in obtaining their information, they have not changed the state of the system?
Oh, absolutely, they have. But this is based on what they know, which is their knowledge of what measurements have been done.
Okay. Based on what they know, I
can start over.
Okay. System, the Hilbert space, two observers, Alice and Bob, two state assignments, row A, row B. Okay. Based on the information they have on what measurements have been done, they are attributing these states now. They're not trying to say what the states were before the measurements were done. Okay. This may become clearer as I go along. Or maybe it will become more confusing. Who knows? Okay. So what we want to know is, if I just give you two density operators, row A and row B, what restrictions are there on what they can be, assuming that these are both descriptions of the same physical system? Or to put it another way, is there some criterion that will let me tell if a given pair of density matrices could be a description of the same system? If they could be, then I will call them compatible. Mind you, the fact that they could be doesn't necessarily mean that they are, but that's a whole another level of question to ask. So, what can we get from intuition? Intuitively, if these are pure states, then in order for them to be compatible with each other, we would intuitively expect that these states have to actually be identical. So why is that? A pure state is basically the maximum amount of information you can have about a quantum system. And if two people both have the maximum amount of information about a system and yet do not agree on its state, then they are in some sense in contradiction with each other, and one or both of them would have to be wrong. For a pure state, there is always some measurement where you can predict the outcome with absolute certainty. But obviously, if these are not the same, then that measurement wouldn't be the same either. So in some sense, in order for two pure states to be compatible in the sense that I'm talking about, they have to be the same. However, if these are mixed states, the question becomes much more complicated. So for a pure state, the idea that there's no missing information, that the amount of information you have is maximal, is illustrated by the fact that the von Neumann entropy is zero. So that implies there's no more information you could acquire that would reduce your entropy. Okay, so this is not a new question. Though it's actually comparatively new to me. I stumbled onto this problem quite by accident by reading a paper by David Merman. That paper is right here, if anyone wants to read it. And he discusses a couple of axioms that were suggested by Rudolf Peierls to answer this question. So Peierls suggested two criteria for density matrices to be compatible. Criterion one, which I will call P1, is that they should commute. And criterion two, which you need in addition to this one fairly obviously, is that they should not actually be orthogonal to each other. So they shouldn't directly contradict each other. Now, two is extremely obvious. If this product is actually zero, that implies that rho A and rho B directly contradict each other. There is a measurement that could absolutely decide between them with no ifs, ands, or buts. His first criterion, however, is a little bit less obvious. And I don't know how he came up with it, but I would imagine that it was based on a sort of intuition like this. If we have two different observables, and we can measure both of them simultaneously, they have to commute. So this is one kind of compatibility. It's two different physical properties that a system can have simultaneously. So then, by not thinking too hard and waving your hands a little, you could arrive at a similar criterion. Oh, I forgot to write this part, which is very important, that they actually commute. I think I said that.
You were using the convention
where everything is zero. If I write something without saying what it's equal to zero. You arrive here where the density matrices commuting would be your criterion for compatibility. This actually does work, but it's way, way, way too strong. It's easy to come up with examples where intuitively you would say the systems, the two descriptions are compatible, and yet their density matrices do not commute. So what does an example like this look like? Well, suppose that Alice writes down a description like this. So far, this is easy enough, but psi and phi are not orthogonal to each other. Okay, and Bob, who's a much more knowledgeable individual than Alice, by the way, writes down that the system is actually in a pure state, psi psi. So if we think of this mixed state as some kind of classical mixture, so Alice is thinking, well, either it's in state psi or it's in state phi, but I don't know which it is, then this would seem to be compatible fairly straightforwardly. Bob actually knows just a little bit more than Alice. He knows that it actually isn't in state phi, but there's nothing inconsistent with those representing different states of knowledge about the same system. Admittedly, thinking of a density matrix in this classical way can get you into trouble, but you can imagine a situation where this would actually be correct. For instance, Alice knows that the system was prepared by a device that, based on some setting, can prepare a system either in state psi or state phi, and that some third party, say Kara, prepared the system by flipping a weighted coin and then putting the thing on the right setting. Bob, however, being much sneakier than Alice, actually snuck in and saw what the coin said, and so he actually knows which state it's in. So that all seems perfectly consistent. But rho A and rho B do not commute. If you write down the commutator of rho A and rho B, it's equal to 1 minus P times psi phi minus phi psi. So unless these things are orthogonal, psi phi here and a phi psi here. Sorry about that. This multiplies this term, this multiplies that term. Okay, so if these are orthogonal, then this vanishes and everything is lovely, but if they're not, then the commutator doesn't vanish, and it fails Pyles's first criterion. Well, that's too bad, but we didn't really have anything to base Pyles's first criterion on anyway, so maybe we can find something that works better. So you might say, well, maybe the second criterion all by itself would be sufficient. But unfortunately, this is so weak that it just really doesn't give you what you need. And in particular, it won't guarantee this. A and B could be different pure states, but non-orthogonal ones, and they'll satisfy P2. So we need something to replace this. So I gave you the classical example. It's easy enough to see how you could get a similar thing arising where this rho, rather than being a proper mixture, arises due to entanglement. You just set up a state of a larger system, which looks like this. So these are orthogonal states of some ancillum, and these are the states of the system, psi and phi. So if Alice then knows this state of the joint system and she wants to attribute a state to S alone, she'll trace out the ancilla and she'll end up exactly with this state right here. Whereas Bob might figure, well, what the heck, I might as well get more information than that, actually go and measure the ancilla and get, say, result zero, then this will give him his state. If Alice doesn't know the result of his measurement, though, this is still the best that she can do. Okay, so is everything absolutely crystal clear so far and we're all in total agreement? Or have I merely stunned you all into silence? I wasn't serious about this, by the way. Okay, but please speak up. All right, so in the paper by Merman, he describes these two axioms. He gives an example which shows that the first one is too strong. And then he says, well, the second one seems okay, but it's not strong enough. We need a new criterion. So I read this paper, and I thought about it for a little while, and I wrote down a criterion and emailed Merman. And Jerry Finkelstein did exactly the same thing off by himself. And I mentioned this problem the other day to Patrick Hayden, who's at Caltech now, and he thought about it for about 1 minute and came up with a criterion too. So this isn't exactly difficult, but you have to, there are some subtle issues that come into it, and you have to think about it somewhat carefully in order to avoid confusion. So the criterion we both came up with is the following. We say that rho A and rho B are compatible. So that's what we want. If and only if their supports have a non-trivial overlap, or intersection, I should say. Actually, this is the form that Jerry Finkelstein wrote it down in. What I wrote down was something slightly different, was there exists decompositions of rho A and B which share at least one state in common. So what do I mean by that? I mean that I can write rho A it's column psi I in this form, and rho B in a similar form. Such that for some I and j, where the pi and the qj that correspond to them are non-vanishing. It turns out that these two are exactly equivalent to each other for finite dimensional Hilbert spaces. And I'll show that in just a minute. I was thinking intuitively in this sort of classical sense. If we think of this as a classical mixture, which even if this arises from entanglement, if you imagine yourself performing a measurement on your ancilla, you always can turn that entangled system into a classical system, into a classical mixture in that way. Then in order for you to be able to satisfy this criterion as you acquire more information, then there have to be expansions of this type for both Alice's and Bob's descriptions, such that as they acquire more information, they will narrow down this state to include the same pure state. So that was the intuitive idea that I was following, was that as you acquire more information, you are, as it is, narrowing in on a single pure state, and that pure state should be included in the decomposition of your initial density matrix. Or another way of thinking about it is if Alice and Bob actually get together and share the information they have, they ought to be able then to agree on a final state. And that state ought to be one that you can get from these two initial states. What Jerry's intuition was, I couldn't say, but if he comes around, you could ask him. But it turns out that the constructions that you use to go from here to here or from here to here in proving that this criterion actually works involve making decompositions of exactly this kind. So this is, it turns out, is a reasonable way of thinking about it. So what this means exactly, okay, what's the support of rho A and rho B? If I write the orthogonal decompositions of rho A and rho B, then the support of rho A is the space which is spanned by these vectors. Actually, it doesn't even have to be an orthogonal decomposition for that to be true. And similarly, the support of rho B is the space spanned by these vectors. Then you can imagine looking for a state which is included in both of those subspaces. Classically, that's a fairly simple thing. Quantum mechanically, where subspaces can be skewed to each other in strange ways, it's slightly less obvious. But if you think of having a projector onto S of rho A and another projector onto S of rho B, then there has to be some state psi which is included in both. Okay. So, what about it? Well, first I'll show that this and this are equivalent to each other. So do people mind if I erase this? I know it's actually very detailed and difficult to reconstruct. But.
Is it necessary to have orthogonal or
non-necessary? No, it's not. It's just, in fact, in general, they won't be. I mean, this is any decomposition, not necessarily their orthogonal decomposition. That's a much, much stronger requirement. Okay. Well, it's kind of obvious if you start from this side that this implies this. So why is that obvious? I can think of the support as being spanned by the eigenvectors of rho A and rho B. But I can equally well think of the support as being spanned by the vectors included in any decomposition of this sort. Since obviously the vector that they have in common is included in both of those spaces, then the supports have a non-trivial overlap. Yeah?
Sorry. When you're talking about, you didn't want it so that there's a possibility that they have pure states, they would be different pure states.
That's right. The expansion of a pure state, obviously, is like this, only with only a single term.
Right. But those terms are, I guess, what seems, I don't know, it seems the same sort of Here's the story of a medic.
Oh, okay.
Charlie is preparing a state pointing in the X-factor.
Okay.
Right? In between, I mean, instead of doing, like, flipping the coins beforehand, do stuff afterwards. Right?
Okay.
Maybe we end up measuring along the Z-direction. Mm-hmm. Bob knows we measure along the Z-direction. Alex doesn't. Mm-hmm. They both try and estimate. There's still some overlap. It's not like Alex doesn't know anything.
Mm-hmm.
So why are we discounting those cases?
I'm not sure I understand your question.
Question that Bob does not know about the measurement that's been performed.
Yeah.
I will actually discuss this point later on. It's a good question. Just to give you a preview of what I'm going to say later. What time is it anyway? Boy, to give you a preview of what I'm going to say later, acquiring information by measurements has a complication in quantum mechanics which is not present classically, which is that if you do a measurement, you disturb the system. And in fact, even if you don't measure S, which I erased, if you don't measure S, but you just measure things that are entangled with it, that can affect your descriptions of S in a non-trivial way that will mess this criterion up. Okay, I'm not assuming that anyone does measurements afterwards. I'm assuming that these are the descriptions based on measurements that have already been done. And I am assuming, and this is the part where what you said still applies, that the measurements that have been done don't lead you into a contradiction of this kind. So you might think of it this way. The measurements were all done by some third party who knows all the answers to all the measurements. Then he gives some of the information to Alice and some of the information to Bob in such a way as not to intentionally mislead them. But I will talk about this more in a little bit. Yeah.
Just sort of further, something I'm confused about. Okay, the idea is that if we have Alice thinks it's in pure state psi 1, Bob thinks it's in pure state psi 2, and psi 1 and psi 2 are not the same.
Mm-hmm.
They're not necessarily orthogonal,
no,
but not the same. Then those are non-compatible.
Those are non-compatible
information. Right?
Right.
Okay. So suppose that my system is a single qubit, or a single spin.
Okay.
And Bob thinks it is spin up, and Alice thinks it's spin plus x.
Okay.
Those are non-orthogonal states, but they're different states.
True.
So now I write out the density matrices,
right,
and I look at that first criteria, say, okay, what's the support of each of these?
Mm-hmm.
Why don't those have intersect? What?
There isn't the support is all states which are in that space. The state X is not in the space spanned by the state Z. You see what I mean? In other words, the projector onto X will not give you 0 when you apply it to Z, but it won't give you Z back again either. It'll give you X with a reduced amplitude, right? So this will not be satisfied. So when I say they have a non-trivial intersection, the opposite of that is not that they're orthogonal to each other. It's that there is no state which is included in both. Okay. And all that is saying is that if that's not the case, then the projector on to the first support will not leave unchanged any vector in the support, in the second support. Okay. Okay.
I mean, could you maybe also specify what you mean by non-trivial intersection? What is a trivial intersection?
A trivial intersection is the empty set.
It's just the
empty zero subspace.
It's the zero.
All intersections are subspaces, but that includes the zero subspace,
right,
and that's the trivial subspace.
Right. Okay. Anything else? Oh, please, come on. Okay. So I wanted to show that these... anyway, I argued that this one implies this one fairly straightforwardly. To go the other way is not too hard, but a little more involved. Let's take the orthogonal decomposition of a single matrix. So rho is equal to sum of pi. And then I have an orthonormal, a set of orthonormal states here, ei. So the EI is delta IJ. And I'm only including non-vanishing PIs here, okay? So these span some space, and any vector in the supportive row can be written as a linear superposition of these things and nothing else, okay? So let's assume that P1 is, so this will be I from 1 to n, P1 is greater than P2, greater than or equal to P2, so I'll just order them, which I can do just by shuffling my labels around. And then I'll define a new set of numbers, Ri, which is equal to Pi minus Pn. So this will be greater than or equal to 0 for all values of I. Okay? So then my row is equal to sum of the Ri's this is to n minus 1, where this is now the projector on the support. Okay, so I've just subtracted off Pn times each of these. So that means I have Pn times the projector on the entire support. Okay? Now, say I have some vector psi, which is in the supportive row. Then I can find a new orthonormal basis for S of rho, Fi, such that F1 is equal to psi. Okay? So that means that I can replace this P with psi psi plus the sum okay, so here we have a decomposition of rho. All of these coefficients are positive, and it includes psi. So if psi is in the support of rho, then I can find a decomposition of rho that includes psi. Obviously, if I can do that for the support of rho A, I can do it also for the support of rho B. If this psi is the one that's included in both of them, I found decompositions of rho A and rho B that both include the vector psi. So these two really are equivalent to each other. Okay.
Now, after your paper appeared on the archive, I pointed out to David Mervin, because nobody minds referencing Schrodinger, that this fact is in a Schrodinger paper from 1935, that any vector in the support can be included in some decomposition.
Yes, that is in that paper. I mean, it's not a new fact. In that, it was a little one thing that's clear.
Of course, just prove it in infinite dimensions.
That's right.
So there's something wrong with his proof.
Yeah, there's something wrong with his proof. Well, he assumes you can invert rho on its support in infinite. Well, it's actually a little unclear whether he's assuming this or not. But if you read him quickly, it's clear that this trick here relies on the fact that there is some finite smallest Pn. And if you have an infinite dimensional Hilbert space, or an infinite dimensional support, I should say, that will not be true, and this construction will fail. So in infinite dimensions, in fact, these two are not necessarily equivalent. And there are vectors in the support of rho which cannot be included in a decomposition of rho. However, in finite dimensions, everything is okay. So I'm just going to worry about that for now. In an infinite dimensional case, it's unclear. In certain cases, you can do it. And it's unclear if there's actually a difference from this point of view between those cases and the other ones. For the most part, we always work with this. So in infinite dimensions, this is actually slightly stronger than that. In the sense that you can have vectors in both supports which can't be included in a decomposition of the two rows. And therefore, this is a slightly stronger assumption in in infinite dimensions. So I suspect that if you take this for your criterion, it still works in infinite dimensions, but we haven't shown that.
What do you mean by works?
That the criterion, you can, well, your the sufficiency construction, which I haven't done yet, but I will in just a second, still goes through in infinite dimensions. Necessity has always been a bit of a fuzzy thing because of the point Ken raised, actually. But I think that goes through too, but we'll see. Any other questions? Oh, darn. Okay. One thing that we should note is that this criterion implies Pyle's second criterion. So this gets subsumed into that criterion. So that's a good thing, because we definitely think this should be satisfied. It doesn't say anything, though, about his first criterion, though the two of these together, I think, guarantee that this will be true. All right. So what do I mean by sufficiency? If I give you a row A and a row B, and they meet this criterion, I say they're compatible, which means that they could be descriptions of the same physical system based on differing information. Well, that means that if I can find a physical system and a set of two sets of information that lead you to make those assignments, then I've shown that this criterion is in fact sufficient to be compatible. So that's fairly easy to do. Let's take our. So is this okay if I erase this? Oh, good. Yeah, well, let's do it here. I didn't ask if this one was okay. So say row A is some state like this. And row B is something like this. So they have a state in common, so they satisfy the criterion. Well, let's now imagine that we have not one, but two ancillary systems, which I will call A and B. And that this is just one, so you have S, the system that these are descriptions of, then you have A and B, and we start with Alice and Bob sharing exactly the same information, which is a joint state on all three, which looks like this. There's some initial amplitude. The state, the system S could be in state psi. And that's correlated with A and B both being in state zero. And we have some additional terms, which include amplitudes for the system to be in the state psi I, which are included here. And those correspond to A being in state zero and B being in state I, where these I's are an orthonormal set. And then we have some more terms, which correspond to B being in state zero and A being in state I, and these two form an orthonormal set together with zero. Okay, so what happens? This is your initial situation. Then Alice says, I think I will acquire some additional information. I will go and measure system A because it's got my initial on it. So Alice measures system A and gets the result zero. So that means that Alice can throw away this term and renormalize the rest. And if you choose your alpha zeros and bi's correctly when you do that, if you then trace out the systems A and B, you'll get exactly this state description. Bob, meanwhile, says, well, here's another system which has my initial on it, so I think I will measure that. So Bob measures that, and he also gets zero. So that means that he will drop this term, and he'll have included these terms. So if these have the right proportions, when you renormalize, you'll get exactly this state. And you can work out algebraically simply that you can always find an alpha, betas, and gammas that will work for any set of your P's and Q's. Okay. So if Alice and Bob get together and Alice says, I measured system A and I got 0, and Bob says, I measured system B and I got 0, then they will throw away all of these terms and they will come to agree that the system is actually in state psi, which is the state they have in common. So we see that if their two descriptions satisfy the criterion, then we can invent a situation where they are, in fact, both descriptions with differing information of the same physical system. So the criterion is sufficient for that to be true. But is it necessary? Well, necessity is a slippery thing. And here you can get yourself into endless knots by wondering exactly how it is they're acquiring their information. Here I had them each measure their own subsystems, so they clearly could not interfere with each other with their measurements. But in a more general case, that might not be true. So I will not worry about how they acquired their information. I will merely assume that this information was all acquired in a consistent manner. It doesn't lead them into contradictions with each other. And then you can prove necessity with basically three simple steps. So what are those steps? Step one. So we imagine that you have the system and you imagine doing a fine-grained measurement on it. So you measure it in a basis of pure states. Okay? And then if you get a particular result that indicates it's in a given pure state psi, you say you have found the system in state psi. So it's just so my terminology is clear. So if anyone has a density matrix rho, then the null space of rho includes vectors which are impossible to see. What that means is, if you do a measurement which includes one of those vectors as a possible outcome, you will never see that outcome. So that's just assuming that their information is reliable in that sense. So that's where you can go wrong if you collect the information in a silly way. Or it's not all that silly. It's actually very easy to do. So from here, it is but a short step to see a superposition of impossible vectors is impossible. So that just means not only, if you believe in rho, then not only do you believe that you can't find something to be in the null space of rho, but that any vector which could be a reasonable pure state description of the system can't include any component of any of those vectors either. Yes?
Definition of null space.
Oh, yeah. If P is the projector onto S of rho, then 1 minus P projects onto null space. So it's the orthogonal complement of S of rho. Yeah?
I don't see how the second thing differs from the first one, because the superposition of vectors in the null space isn't in there.
But this could be the superposition of vectors in two different people's null spaces. This is where I start assuming wildly and hope that none of you lose faith in me along the way.
It's important to emphasize that, otherwise it looks like a pretty innocuous assumption, since it's equivalent to the first.
Right. Yeah, I didn't actually say this here. So this is for anyone's row. Yes.
Could you perhaps say again what you mean by composable vector?
Okay, if I do, okay, say this vector is psi. I can imagine doing a measurement, okay, whose outcomes will leave the system in the state psi or one of a set of other pure states, okay?
So a vector is just impossible if neither Alice nor Bob could do a measurement that would. With any non-zero probability.
It oughtn't to matter who does the measurement. This is a measurement on the system itself into pure states, which includes psi as an outcome, so not just a component of psi. So I'm saying that this outcome can never occur. Okay.
So we're assuming here that rho A and rho B are compatible now in lower dimensions.
I am assuming that they're compatible, and I'm working to get this criterion from that. Okay, and then the third and seemingly most innocent assumption of all is that some vector must be possible. Because if all vectors are impossible, then there can be no outcome to measurements. And then, you know, chaos ensues and the stock market crashes. And you know, horrors follow, which we will not recount here. But in any case, this one actually is the one that gives you the necessity. Because if this criterion is not satisfied, so that the supports are actually disjoint, then every vector will be a superposition of vectors which are in a null space of somebody. The only way for that not to be true is if the supports include at least one vector in common. So, and this, by the way, immediately shows that if you have two people who describing the system as being in a pure state, those pure states have to be identical.
It's not quite true that every vector would be in a null subspace. Every vector would be in the span of the.
It will be in the span of the collection of null subspaces. That's right.
The space generated by the union of the null subspaces.
That's right. Exactly. Okay.
And I think you might have. You want to assume this and prove the condition, right? This implies.
These together imply this.
Whereas you answered Robin's question by saying you were assuming the condition. You're not.
No, I didn't think I was saying that. But what I'm assuming is that they are compatible. In the sense that they could be descriptions of the same physical system. I'm arguing that this is a criterion, a necessary and sufficient criterion for that to be true. And these are my assumptions, which I'm using more or less to define what I mean by compatible. Okay? And this is my criterion for compatibility.
Well, all three of these things are equivalent. That's the thing. The two previous ways of stating it, and these are all equivalent ways
right.
of stating it.
It's just, this is a more, this is appeal to intuition, and this is a mathematical statement. This is a stick. This is a cup. Okay. So, well, I'll go on. Only 10 minutes left. This is very, very sad. I'll talk about the classical analogy to this problem briefly, and then sum up. And I'll try to get back to Ken's point briefly. So classically, the equivalent of a pure state is a point in phase space. So I'll call this X. So this is in some phase space W. So that's perfect knowledge. You know exactly the positions and momenta. I'll treat this like it's a discrete variable just because it's simple, but you should be aware that in fact everything will end up being ugly integrals. So if you don't have complete knowledge, then what you have is a probability distribution on these points in phase space.
What's so W there?
W is phase space.
Oh, I see.
I know it's not an obvious notation for phase
space.
But I'm already using P for something else. It's in a W phase space, yeah. This phase space's name is W, actually. It's short for Willard. So rho is a probability distribution on phase space. And I can write that as some sum over all phase space points, some probability for being at that point, and then characteristic function for that point, which would be a delta function in the continuous case and a Kronecker delta in the discrete case. Okay. So our criterion would then have as its equivalent the statement that if you have two such probability distributions, rho A and rho B, that they have to include some phase spaces in common. In other words, they have to have non-zero probabilities for the same phase space point, for at least one point. Okay. Actually, however, we see that that is exactly the same as this, which is just the statement that the two distributions are not disjoint from each other. So, whereas in the quantum case, P2 and this compatibility criterion are not the same, in the classical case, they are. Now, classically, we could actually imagine a much stronger condition than this. To say that they have some points in common, or that they have non-zero probability for at least one point in common, is a relatively weak requirement. If you imagine just going out and measuring it, they could get a consistent result if that point or set of points actually turned up. But if they didn't, then it would show that, in fact, their descriptions were, at least one of them was actually wrong in his description, that some of them had false information. A much stronger requirement would be to require that there be some measurement that you can do such that whatever outcome you get, they will end up agreeing afterwards. Okay. So what would that be? That would mean that if I partitioned my phase space into different regions and then measured which region the system was in, that after doing that and renormalizing the two probability distributions, they would be identical. So that's capturing the intuitive idea that by collecting more information, they could come into agreement. Okay. If they overlap, then obviously they could come into agreement by collecting more information, but they could also discover that in fact they disagree. If I require that there's some measurement so that they will definitely come into agreement afterward, that seems like an even stronger form of compatibility. And that can only be true if the supports of the two probability distributions are exactly the same. Okay? So for every point that has a non-zero probability in one distribution, it also has a non-zero probability in the other distribution, and vice versa.
Of course, you're kind of dropping this idea here that things that have zero probability don't occur. Because otherwise, if they overlap, then all the cases that have zero probability won't occur. And
well, that's assuming that they are actually compatible. So here, but you're right, yeah. I've dropped the assumption that they are necessarily compatible. Okay. If we go back to the quantum mechanical case, in fact, we find that the two statements that I said that were equivalent in the classical case, that is that there's some measurement such that the outcomes will bring them into agreement and that the supports are equal, are not at all the same. For the supports to be exactly the same is obviously an even stronger criterion than this. Okay, and it necessarily implies this criterion. So it's sufficient but not necessary. However, to find a measurement such that after you do the measurement, the people will be guaranteed to be in agreement is an almost completely vacuous statement in quantum mechanics. You can always do this no matter what their initial state estimates are. So for instance, suppose that rho A is 0, 0, and rho B is 1, 1. Not only are they attributing different pure states, they're attributing orthogonal pure states. They completely disagree with each other as to the state of the system. But if I choose to measure, and the base is 0 plus or minus 1, then afterwards, whichever outcome you get, they'll agree what the state is. And you can always do this. But for the supports to be equal is a much, 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 much stronger condition, far stronger than this. Yes?
When you say you make a measurement, what you're saying is that a measurement is made upon the system and the information is given to both of them, not that each of them makes an independent measurement.
That's right.
Okay.
They jointly agree to do some measurement.
Yeah, they can come together and agree on a measurement. Mm-hmm. And without even making it, they know that after that measurement, they mm-hmm. would agree on the state.
So what we see is that classically, criteria which are identical to each other are not identical to each other quantum mechanically. And in fact, criteria that are extremely strong classically can be extremely weak quantum mechanically. So, just a word on the point that Ken raised. I promised I would get to it, which is just Alice and Bob have acquired their information in some way. When I did this construction, I had them measure separate subsystems in order to avoid interfering with each other. But in fact, I could have been much more malicious than that. Suppose that the original state, now we'll assume just two subsystems. This is S and this is A. So the system and the ancillary system are in this state. Alice and Bob both know this initially. Then Alice decides that she'll go and acquire some additional information. So she measures A. And she measures A in this basis. So this is equal to plus or minus. So say she finds result plus. She then infers that the system is also in state plus. Bob doesn't know she's done this measurement, so he decides he too will go and measure A. But he's very unlucky because he failed to notice that it didn't have his initial on it. So he measures it in the 0-1 basis. And gets, say, 1. Then he infers from that that the system is in state 1-1. So by acquiring information, he and Alice, who initially agreed, have come to disagree with each other.
Now, when Bob made his measurement, Alice already made
She'd already made her measurement. And if, yes?
Oh, I understand now what the two symbols mean. Okay, sorry.
Where's the S in the picture here? Yeah.
Where's the S?
There's an implicit S on the row.
Sorry,
A.
This is
oh,
that's
S. Row A, yes.
Yeah. That's exactly the problem.
There you go.
This is from tracing out A. Is everyone clear on this now? So if Alice and Bob just set out to acquire information, they can trip over each other in this way. And it's actually rather difficult to say exactly what restrictions you have to put in how they acquire information to prevent this from happening. But we were implicitly assuming that this wasn't happening when we wrote down these assumptions here. And I don't really have an answer to this problem, except to say that when Alice and Bob acquire information, if they don't want to unintentionally mislead each other, it requires a certain amount of cooperation between them. One simple way to get around this is to imagine that all of the information is acquired by a third party who takes all of this into account and gives parcels out the information between Alice and Bob in a non-malicious fashion. So it's a trustworthy third party. You could also imagine that Alice and Bob know all the measurements the other person is going to do. They just don't know the outcomes. That will also work. But those are fairly strong assumptions about the ways you're allowed to collect information. And if you deviate from them, you could get into trouble just like this. The other point one could make in this context is that I was assuming that all the information they had came from measurements ultimately. But of course the criterion doesn't really matter to the criterion where you got row A and row B from. So you could just think of Alice and Bob as having information which they acquired by unknown means, and that if they got together, would not could result in them arriving at and agreeing upon a single state description. And all that we're assuming is that when they do this, they will not discover some flaw in the way they collected their own information that you know arose like this.
I have a question about it. If the information came from measurements by a third party, mm-hmm. not the same information.
Yes.
The systems that they have information will be different because measurements have to be done one after the other.
Well, the system. I mean, their estimates of the system could be different from each other. But we assume that because all the information came from a third party, that the third party has a state description which is compatible in this sense with both of theirs, and that if they combined the information they'd been given, they would arrive at the same state description that the third party has. Okay, so it's all the same physical system we're talking about here. It's merely the descriptions that are differing. Okay? All right, so to sum up, the first point which I slipped by without actually, you know, trying to justify is that it is possible for different observers to describe a system by different states, at least in the case of mixed states. That seems pretty straightforward. You can easily imagine physical situations in which that would arise. However, not different pure states, because there you're somehow, that's a stronger contradiction. You somehow are assuming they both have maximal information, and yet some information that would resolve their dispute is missing. The criteria suggested by Piles are too strong. However, his second criterion, that the product of the two density operators is necessary. So you can show that this criterion, which is a bit stronger than that, but not as strong as his two criteria together, is both necessary and sufficient, provided that you buy this argument about what it means for systems to be compatible, or for state descriptions to be compatible. The intuition you would get from imagining the similar classical problem fails drastically here, because very, very strong requirements on the classical system can end up being extremely weak on the quantum system. And this is basically because in quantum mechanics you have an enormous variety of possible measurements which don't exist in the classical case, and these measurements disturb the system in different ways, which is another effect which in principle can be eliminated classically. And this leads to the fact that the way that Alice and Bob acquire their information in the first place is actually a somewhat subtle question. And mainly I'm just not worrying about it for the purposes of this talk. But in reality, it could actually be a real problem for a highly quantum mechanical system. And that is basically it. Thank you. Yeah.
If Alice and Bob get together, they compare their state, and they verify your criteria, and they see that there is, suppose, just one state is in both such cases. And if they make a measurement in which this particular state is one of the basis states, will they end up with this state for sure?
Assuming that that's the only state that they have in common, then where did they get that state for sure?
If you meet your criteria,
yeah, they will. They would have to. The thing is, you do have to worry about whether or not you could write a different decomposition so that you would have different states in common. Because then it would be more complicated. But if there's only one decomposition with only one state in common, then yeah, they would have to get that state.
Yeah, that's the statement that the intersection of the supports is a one-dimensional subspace.
Right. If it's higher than that, then it could be, then there could be more. Other questions?
So are your results compatible with the idea that a quantum system actually has a pure state and you just don't know it? And if they are compatible with that, is that what you think?
The last one is a loaded question.
Well, I didn't ask because it was unloaded.
I see. The question was loaded when it was handed to me. I would say that it's not really compatible with the idea that every isolated system has a pure state. Though to see the incompatibility, you would probably have to expand beyond discussions just of the system as alone. If it's entangled with other things,
well, then it wouldn't have a pure state.
Then it wouldn't have, well, okay, the idea, maybe I'm misunderstanding your question, but if you're asking, do I believe that a density matrix really means that it's in one of this set of pure states with given probabilities, the answer is no.
Yeah, I was asking that, but my first question was, is that what these compatibility conditions are based on?
No, they don't actually care where rho comes from. So rho could be a classical mixture, or it could arise from the system being entangled, or both. There is, however, one point which I didn't make that I probably should. In some cases, there can be information that you have which is not easily encapsulated in a state rho, which is, say, you happen to know that it is a classical mixture, that you know the device prepared it in one of these two states. That's additional information that you have that will not change your description of rho, but it might imply that some of these decompositions would be unphysical in that sense, in the sense that you could go find more information that would pick out one of the states in one particular decomposition, but not any of the other ones. Okay. So that again, I'm assuming that that's not the case. But
well, then you could just say there's another party around that knows which of those states from the decomposition.
Yeah, well, that classically, basically you are assuming that there's either another party or there's, you know, it's written on a piece of paper somewhere, or you know, you can reconstruct it from the ashes of the burned notes from the laboratory that burned down, or whatever, you know, something like that, that it's somehow accessible. Yeah.
Can you tell how much information they gain by getting together?
Well, I mean, yeah. I mean, depends on how you're counting it. The obvious thing would be they would get together, they would share their information, they would arrive at a new state description. The von Neumann entropy of that state description would necessarily, I believe, be lower, and that would, in some sense, be the information they'd acquired by getting together. Obviously, it would be different for each of them, how much that was.
Well, okay, so let me refer to my question. How do they update their state when they get together?
Well, since I'm not saying in what form this information is held, that's a little hard to say. But in this case, Alice throws away these terms, Bob throws away these terms. They get together, they throw away all those terms. And
that's the case when you have only one-dimensional intersection, right?
That's right.
Just one, so you go from entropy S to zero. But in general things.
Well, it actually isn't. It isn't necessarily true that you have only one-dimensional intersection here. Because these psi i's and phi i's could also have a non-trivial intersection. You know, so it could, or this could with that, and this with that, you know. So, well, yeah, if, now that would be silly, because then you would have psi split into two different terms. But anyway, these could have a non-trivial overlap. So that would be a strong, you know, so it's not just limited to that case. But this is a particular sort of illustration of how this can arise. It could be enormously complicated. Some of the information could be classical, some could be measurement results. You know, some could be knowledge of Ancelas, that, you know, so it could be quantum information in a sense. So who knows? They could do all kinds of funky stuff.
Couldn't you, since before they talk to each other, their knowledge each of them has a density matrix that describes their knowledge.
Yeah.
Presumably, they should share a density matrix, rho c, afterwards.
Yes.
They agree. And that density matrix should tell you they know about the state. And then if you can calculate that density matrix and calculate its entropy, then you know how much information they've gained.
There's nothing here that says they have to agree on the state accurately. I mean, apparently they will if the intersection is one-dimensional, but if it's two-dimensional, they could still be assigning quite different density operators in that two-dimensional subspace. I don't think it's true. The entropy would necessarily go down. I mean, initially, those two states might be extremely unlikely, and some other state is extremely likely, and afterward, they would assign a bit. One of them might assign a bit of entropy.
But after they've shared information, they both have exactly the same information. Therefore,
no, they don't have exactly the same information. What's
different?
They could.
How could they not? Because initially,
Alice knows that she's got a much better measuring device than Bob.
That's included in her. She should share that information with Bob. We're assuming that all of their information is contained in these density matrices.
Yes. I'm assuming that if they're both describing the same physical system, and if they share all information, including things like that, then they will have the same state description at the end. It's possible for them to partially share information and still have different states, which I think is the situation that you're hinting at, Mike. It's true that if this intersection is not one-dimensional, then if you just look at the components of their two states which are contained in this intersection, they could still be different because they could have different weights. However, that would imply that they still have some additional information.
Well, the problem is that information is not always a straightforward or even unique way of turning information in a state assignment. It could be just vague information. So they would just, even if they share all the information, they might disagree on the way to turn the information into a particular state assignment. They would agree on the null spaces, and this is all this is about, but they would still disagree on the extra state assignment.
So, but, similar to the case I described where they know not only what rho is, but that it's actually a particular classical decomposition, there can be information beyond the state assignment which has to be taken into account as well. So I don't know if that's the same point or an unrelated point.
It's unrelated.
Oh, well, fine. So Rudiger says it's an unrelated point. Other questions? Yeah.
Is the generalization to several parties trivial?
The generalization to several parties for this is trivial. It's just the intersection of all of their supports has to be non-empty. Or similarly, they all have to have decompositions such that all of those decompositions share a state in common. The generalization of this is actually not quite so straightforward. You could easily imagine a situation where pairwise this would never vanish, but nevertheless the three together are contradictory. It says it's 0 or 1, this one says it's 1 or 2, and the other one says it's 0 or 2, and you all get together and it all goes away. It's contradictory.
Can you say anything about how many agreeing parties you need to fully reconstruct the state?
Well, you may never, I mean, what is fully, if you mean to arrive at a pure state, you may never arrive at a pure state. They may just not even collectively have enough information to do that. In a sense, to arrive at it, it's not like there is some distant goal, which is to assign pure states to everyone. That's going to be impossible. I mean, even if you believe that the information is somehow out there accessible, if you have entangled states, then the system will not have a pure state, no matter what. So you're just trying to do the best you can, just like all of us in this crazy world, where you have this information and you want to make the very best state assignment that you can with that information. And if you acquire more information, you want to take that also into account. So that's the only thing we're assuming about Alice and Bob, is that they are earnest, serious people who are trying seriously to describe the system, unlike me. Anything else? Yeah.
Little question. You've been talking a lot about quantum states, and you could consider lifting this to quantum dynamics. So you can ask, when are Alice and Bob going to agree on the description of the dynamical properties of the system? Do they agree that that's the same Hamiltonian? Do they agree maybe that it should be described in terms of some master equation or whatever? And sort of at some level, it's obvious that such a problem makes sense, because in the case of an open system, it will depend on the state of the environment. If it's possible for them to disagree on the state of the environment, then it is possible, in principle, for them to disagree on the dynamics. So many different consistent dynamics can be considered. Have you thought at all about consistent quantum dynamical?
No, I haven't thought about it at all. It sounds offhand like it could be difficult, because there's lots of reasons that dynamics could be different. For instance, you could have different Hamiltonians which depend on sets of parameters, and their knowledge of these parameters are imperfect. So they both agree basically on the kind of dynamics, but nevertheless their state descriptions will tend to get more and more into disagreement. They could be interacting with the environment and they have different knowledge of the environment, as you said. You could have both of those. You could have, they just completely disagree on the very type of Hamiltonian, and I'm not sure how you acquire information about what the Hamiltonian is without many copies of systems, and repeated experiments. So it's a little bit different in kind from this, where I'm assuming there's just one system and they acquired the information however they've done it, and they're trying to describe that one system, rather than that they sort of have many, many systems that can be prepared in an identical state, and they're trying to figure out what that is. So I haven't really, that's off the top of my head. It may all be total nonsense, but maybe not. Anything else? Okay.